is. I'm Cameron Esposito, the host of Wham Bam Pow. This is a movie podcast. We're going to chat about movies, movie news, movie theory. We're going to make a little game we play later. Doug Jones is going to stop by for an interview. Also, we're going to talk about the movie Hellboy. How awesome is your life? I don't know. Keep listening. Hey, just as an early heads up, Hellboy is available on Netflix Watch Instant. So if you are a new listener to the show, you could literally pause right now, go watch the movie, come back, and we'd still be here. So first off, I'd like to welcome our panelists to the show. To my right, we've got stand-up comic and Afro spokesman, Mr. Ricky Carmona. How are you doing, Ricky?
I'm good, girl. What's poppin', people?
Am I supposed to answer for the people?
Would you please speak on behalf of all the people?
Has anybody ever said, because you say what's popping a lot, has anyone ever given you an answer? Like, what's the right, are you supposed to be like, corn? What are you supposed to say? That's stupid.
Corn is good. I like corn. No, the reaction is just what's going on. Just tell me, give me something.
Yeah.
You know, what's popping?
I love it. I love it. And also, people can't see this, but when you do that, you shake your shoulders.
There's a lot going on.
What's popping? And then you pop out. It's like you're smashing together two tits you don't have.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
You'd be surprised.
Tits. I already said tits. How far in the show are we?
Great.
You'd be surprised?
You got some, about my sports
you
bra.
You got some tits
I got some today's.
All right. My voice got real high. To my left, speaking of popping, I was going to say tits. Ms. Rhea Butcher, stand-up comic extraordinaire, and Lady James Dean. How are you doing?
Why, thank you. Feeling very calm, cool, and collected over here. Nothing's popping on me. Big fan of Popples, though.
Oh, Popples. God, man. If I had a pillow pal for every Popple, you know what I mean? If I had just one.
A pillow pal for all the Popple people.
Yeah.
Please.
I just would. If I had a dime, if I had a hammer, I would hammer on a Popple, you know? We are going to start the show with some movie news. So Sam Raimi, he is the guy that directed the original Spider-Man trilogy that had Tobey Maguire in it. You guys know who I'm talking about,
right?
Oh, yeah.
So he had, for a really long time, avoided seeing the new Andrew Garfield Spider-Man, the Amazing Spider-Man. And he saw, this is what he was telling the press. He would not see it because he likened the experience to attending an ex-girlfriend's wedding, which I thought was very sweet.
That
absolutely.
Is sweet.
He says he felt a relationship to his material.
So close to Spidey.
But the reason that I'm saying that this is news is because he actually recently watched that movie, The Amazing Spider-Man, decided he loved it, had nothing but praise. I will say, did that entire movie seem like just an upgrade of the attractiveness of its stars?
Absolutely.
Like Emma Stone through a different pair of glasses is Kirsten Dunst. And I mean, like a dirtier pair of glasses. Not that Kirsten Dunst isn't cute, but she's decidedly quirky.
Yes.
Tobey Maguire, a little bit shifty, squidgy. He's got a squidgy eyebrow. You know what I mean? He's just soft. He's got a funny, squeaky voice.
His eyeballs are a little weird.
He knows about the Cider House rules.
Absolutely.
Andrew Garfield, his hair's fucking perfect.
And he knows how to make Facebook.
He does know how to make Facebook. I just think that whole movie, I mean, I actually thought it was pretty good.
I really liked
it. Rhea and I watched it on an airplane together, which is the best place to watch Spider-Man because then you're ready for anything. You know what I mean?
For sure.
But I did miss seeing Kirsten Dunst's one little weird tooth. And I did also miss just like the anxiety that she brings to any role that she's in. You know, I mean, I like her, but she is like, she does make me have a certain amount of. I mean, she kissed Brad Pitt when she was 10. You know what I mean? You don't forget about her.
That's the Kirsten Dunst that I've never forgotten. To me, she's always Kirsten from Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah.
Well, she will always be.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
This is what we should all. It is like hanging out with her is like going to your ex-girlfriend's wedding when your ex-girlfriend is a 10-year-old vampire. Another recent movie news, Nick Cage. He was doing press for the movie The Croods, which I can't believe he's even in that. I'm so sorry, Nick Cage. Are you okay, Nick Cage?
I had no idea he was in that either.
Isn't that
upsetting?
I followed
Nick Cage pretty closely.
I think everybody wants to have an intervention with Nick Cage.
Everybody wants to pull him
and be like, hey, bro, what's up?
Like, we all know you're bald.
Yes,
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that on the radio. He probably lives in my building.
I think he's
probably not, actually. He seems
right around the corner.
But yeah, he was doing press for The Croods. Somebody asked him, are you thinking about making a Ghost Rider 3? Are you going to be in that? He said he would never come back and do a third Ghost Rider movie. Mm-hmm. I honestly did not know there was a second Ghost Rider. Did you guys know there was a second Ghost Rider?
Of course.
Have we seen the second Ghost Rider?
We watched it together.
I thought that was the first one.
Still didn't even.
How is there any different?
I mean, it's not a lot.
His head bursts into flames. Is that what we're talking about?
Does he yep. piss fire in the second one?
He absolutely does.
Does he eat a raw steak that Cher serves to him?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I saw that one. Okay. This is another thing I want to talk to you guys about because I think you're both going to have strong opinions on this. Very recently in London, they showed 30 minutes of Star Trek Into Darkness, the new Star Trek movie, at a special screening. They also showed that extended trailer during the Super Bowl. I think there are also three or two other trailers and a series of promotional plastic glasses that you can get at like a 7-Eleven. My point is there anything that we don't know about this movie yet? Like, is it okay that they're just putting out this much? How do you feel about that? Do you want that much of that movie out there for you?
I used to love trailers. I am on the other side now. I haven't watched the latest Iron Man 3 trailer. I'm like, no, I kind of like being surprised again when I go to the movies. So the new Star Trek teaser trailer they just put out, haven't watched that. Like, I'm good. I kind of have an idea of what may happen. Let the story surprise me when I'm there.
I can't imagine going to see a screening where 30 minutes of a movie was shown and then just going back and seeing those other 30 minutes.
That was great,
as
right?
As dropped into a movie. I really wish any of that had context. I mean, was it the middle 30 minutes? That's the other thing they didn't say. It's just the end. It's all resolution.
Yeah. What the? That would be the best.
Also, two pretty big deal directors have movies coming out. They have release dates for these movies. So the first one is Christopher Nolan's new film. It's called Interstellar, and it's going to come out on November 7th, 2014. So that's the release date. Of course, we don't know the end of when the film will be in theaters, but we do know that the end of the movie will be disappointing.
You hear that, Christopher Nolan? You hear that?
She doesn't like it.
I don't like his stuff. Ricky, you like his stuff, right?
To a point, I'm not as crazy about him as everybody else is. I feel like there's one thing that he's, and I don't know what that thing is, that he's not doing in his movies yet that isn't like, all right, now that's perfect.
Oh, having any heart?
That has something to do with it. I never feel emotionally connected with his, whoever the protagonist is.
Yeah.
It's always interesting, but I'm never like, yeah,
that's
I'm
my
in
issue.
That guy somewhere.
Were you guys fans of Memento or no?
Very much so.
Well, okay, I saw it in
very
college.
Much
so.
So,
like, when you see that movie in college,
sure.
That's not fair because all you're doing is trying to be the most interesting person you could possibly be.
Yeah.
And you own it on VHS and DVD.
And if you throw Memento in there, it's just like, oh, you don't get this? Well, I'm also minoring in this. You know, like, you have to. It's the only way to prove that you're. Did you like that movie?
I did. But again, also, it's like, oh, my favorite movies are Memento and Amelie.
They're both about a puzzle that you live out your life.
The movie is like a real experience.
Do you really like the movie Amelie?
I do, actually.
I love that movie.
Amelie's great.
God, I didn't know that about you. That's so romantic.
I can step outside.
Yeah, get out of here.
It's getting hot in here.
Okay, so Christopher Nolan's new film. There's another new film coming out. This is in June, and it's M. Night Shyamalan's new movie. It's called After Earth. I actually watched the trailer for this because I was pretty interested in it. Here's why. The movie stars a father-son duo, Jaden Smith and Will Smith. I had to know what Jaden looked like.
The Karate Kid himself.
I just had to know, like, what's going on with his hair these days?
Yeah.
Is he a man? You know? he's like a grown kid. He's looking big and buff. I don't know if anybody's expecting anything from M. Night Shyamalan anymore.
The most I get impressed with him is when I hear people pronounce his name, which you've done twice now, correctly. And I'm like, there you go. There you go.
You made it, kid.
He is on my, man, you've got a lot of work to do to get me back.
I do know that Doug Jones was in an M. Night Shyamalan movie, and he'll be on the show later. He was in the movie Lady in the Water. He plays one of the,
In the Water?
Yeah, he plays Bryce Dallas Howard in the movie The Help.
Wow.
He plays Bryce Dallas Howard in the movie The Help, going back and just watching Bryce Dallas Howard, the real one, on set in Lady in the Water.
Man.
No, he plays like a bush creature, like a creature that looks like a bush. Right up his alley.
Perfect.
Jeb or George or... See what I did there?
Barbara.
Thank you. Good night. Barbara.
Well, that's it for movie news. We will be back to talk with Rhea Butcher on extreme Oscar baiting after this.
Hi, everybody. This is Justin McElroy, and in the rich fiction we just created, the host of this podcast have gone for a little pee break.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy. Quick, while they're not looking, slip our comedy in.
I'm Griffin McElroy, the baby brother, and stop, I'm the police. What are we doing?
This is my brother and me, where we take questions and turn them into wisdom and make fun of you.
We make fun with you?
We make fun with you because English is our second language.
Well, now it's getting racist. We literally had 25 seconds, and we did racist with it.
So wait till you see what we can do with a whole hour on my brother and me.
We're brothers.
We're experts.
And we're sorry.
Welcome back. I'm Cameron Esposito.
Ricky Carmona.
Rhea Butcher.
And I also just want to add, I feel like M. Night Shyamalan... His career jumped the shark when he started casting himself in his movie. Do you remember that happened? I just remember that happened while we were on break. That he was like, and the twist is, I'm actually an actor. You know? Like, it was this ultimate twist that had taken 17 movies to prove.
Yeah, and what it's a guy. Really bad when he whenever he shows up. It's like when Spike or Quentin shows up in a movie. It's like, hey, guys, I love you, but come on.
Get out of there.
Get somebody else in there.
You know, I will say the only on-screen moment of Quentin Tarantino's that's ever been warranted is when he played one of several Elvises in a Golden Girls episode. Look it up. There's a wedding scene. I can't even remember which Golden Girl is getting married, but they have like 27 Elvises.
Oh, that's amazing.
And the one in the back right corner is Quentin Tarantino.
That's why this show is the best, everybody. Yeah. Right there. That's why.
Rhea, you also brought in an article to discuss on today's show. It's from ScreenCrush.com, and it's about Matthew McConaughey's recent physical transformation for the filming of his new movie, Dallas Buyers Guide.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the article?
Matthew McConaughey lost a ton of weight for this movie. He looks insane. He's gaunt.
Okay, so wait, what's the movie? Dallas Buyers Guide is...
He plays a man who's diagnosed with AIDS in the very early 80s.
Okay, and he lost weight for the role.
Yes, he lost a ton of weight. I mean, he looks like he's about 100 pounds. I mean...
Because you sent me the article I was reading, I think he lost 40. Did he lose... I think he lost 40 pounds,
mm-hmm.
Which is really extreme. I mean, I've been trying to lose 2 pounds.
And it's rough.
Try as I might...
I trimmed a little bit off my fro, 22 pounds last night. Boom.
The thing that concerned me the most is that he was just in Magic Mike, like, last year. And he was huge and bulk and, like, muscly and crazy protein and all this stuff. And now it's all gone. It's just completely gone.
Yeah, well, 22 of those pounds were actually his tan. Ricky cut his fro and then Matthew kind of got rid of his tan. No, but in all seriousness, you're right. He did bulk way up. And then he slimmed way down. And so it is an extreme. Actually, after you sent me this article, I was thinking a lot about actors that bounce around that much. I mean, I think there are other couple examples of people that have done both of those sides of the spectrum. Like Matt Damon is one. I don't know if you guys saw Courage Under Fire.
Yep.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
He's like a heroin addict.
Yeah, yeah.
He lost 40 pounds for that. And then also in The Informant, I don't remember how much he gained for that, but he... like put on an additional 40 pounds on top of his regular frame. And that's true for Christian Bale as well, mm-hmm. in The Machinist and Batman Begins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just bouncing. And I mean, we're talking about like 80 pounds in terms of the total transformation between those things. How do you guys feel about, you know, I even try to think about women that have done this. And I can think of a couple. I mean, I can think of Hilary Swank. Because I know she lost weight for Boys Don't Cry. And I know she also put on weight for Million Dollar Baby. And do you remember, I don't know if you remember when Meryl Streep was in The River Wild, but it was like this huge, even Meryl Streep has one of these
that
in her.
That was a controversy?
Well, it wasn't a controversy, but women weren't necessarily training for movies the way that men were. I guess I was thinking about this in terms of the health aspect. And when are we asking too much of an actor?
Yeah. But on the health aspect, from what you say, I thought initially, I was like, I'm sure they work out. They work off all their weight and then they eat whatever. And then I was listening to Paul F. Tompkins' latest album, And he tells his story about Matt Damon in The Informant. He put on all this weight. He was taking these blue gel pills. And that's like a standard thing. Like if you're going to put on weight or lose weight, you take these blue gel pills and they somehow like speed up your metabolism or slow down your metabolism. And that's how they do it.
Wow.
Because I was just like, oh, well, I'm sure Matt Damon isn't just an amazing actor.
Regimen.
He's a great athlete.
Yeah.
That's how he does it.
Oh, diet pills.
Right. Well, I mean,
sure, they're Hollywood diet pills.
I don't think you're very far off. I mean, Jared Leto is also in this movie.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He is talking about how he also lost a ton of weight for this role. And I read some of the stuff about what he's saying about his weight loss. Because Matthew McConaughey hasn't really said anything about it. There's pictures of him on set. But Jared Leto is openly talking about the fact that he is fasting for this role. He's also lost, I think, 40 pounds. And he's just not eating. And he's like, yeah, sometimes I feel like I'm going to faint. But a lot of people have fasted throughout history. And I think about that, which is like, wow. I mean, it's true also. A lot of spiritual people didn't eat a lot. But I think about that. And then I also think about Heath Ledger going, you know, deep inside of that character when he was the Joker and then possibly not being able to come back. I know there's been a lot of speculation that he had a hard time with insomnia and like just isolation after the work that he did for that role. And he just couldn't bounce out of it. I don't know that that's like a huge issue, but I wonder about bodies as a tool. I mean, it is a tool, but I wonder about
the thing that, drew me to the article is that, number one, it seems like there's got to be some sort of long-term effect on your body, like ballooning up like that and eating crazy food and then taking it all off and then doing it again. But also, it just seems like it distracts from the actual performance. It's like method to this crazy degree where people are just like, oh, he's so thin, give him an Oscar. Or like, oh, she's so ugly, give her an Oscar. Like, Charlize Theron's really good in Monster, but I think people gave her the Oscar because she's beautiful and she looked intensely ragged in that movie Monster instead of it being like the actual performance, you know?
Yeah, she is amazing in that, but I don't disagree with. And I don't disagree with you because I don't know that the Oscars always reward that kind of a role unless it's paired with something else. Like unless it's paired with. But she also was like a tiny trans man and lived that way for 75 months.
Yeah.
You know, like I mean, I think that you're right that's such an amazing performance and a heartbreaking movie and it really sticks with you. I do know for a fact that Matt Damon, after he lost all that weight for Courage Under Fire, was like in and out of the hospital and had some serious long term health effects on his bod. I also think that it's a lot to.
I like that you said
his bod.
In that harrowing story, he still got a bod.
Yeah, he does have a bod. He does have a bod. We'll be back with more after this. Hey, guess what? The 2013 Max Fun Drive is just around the corner.
Maybe you're already a devoted monthly member of Maximum Fun.
Or maybe you've never thought about donating before.
Either way, tune in beginning April 1st. We'll be running through some great material, doing awesome giveaways, and tempting you with thank you gifts like our all-new Intimate Sensations pack. We mean it. Don't miss this. The Maximum Fun Drive starts April 1st and runs for just 2 weeks. Tune in, show your support, and catch the best content Wham Bam Pow has to offer. We rely on you for donations. Thank you so much. I'm Cameron Esposito.
Ricky Carmona.
Rhea Butcher.
And this has been a message from Wham Bam Pow. We are back. I'm Cameron Esposito.
I'm Rhea Butcher.
Ricky Carmona.
And we are going to get to that part of the show that we like to call Pitch It. Now listen, we live in Los Angeles, and as all of you listeners know, everybody that lives in LA is a film executive. I'm a film executive, and so is Rhea. Mm-hmm. We've got tons of money, and we can make films.
So much money.
Now, Ricky Carmona, you are going to be pitching us a movie. We can decide whether or not we will make your film. Today, I believe that you are going to pitch us the final installment of the Die Hard franchise. Ricky Carmona.
Yes, that is right.
Pitch it.
I will be pitching the final installment in the Die Hard franchise. My final installment is called Die Hard.
I like it.
Thank
All right.
You.
on board.
Now, excuse me, I'm going to put this table right here next to me for you guys to just throw the money. Just throw the money because this movie is getting made.
Can we get a basket on that table? Sheila? Thank you.
Love you, Sheila. How my movie works, my movie will be, I'm going to give you who's behind the movie first because it's going to set up what happens in the movie.
Okay.
Die Hard to be directed by Christopher Nolan.
Oh, shit.
Boom.
All right, I want you to convince me.
Yeah, all right.
Make me believe.
Written by Christopher and Jonathan Nolan. They work together. They've written Memento. They've written the Dark Knight series. This movie, the taglines back in the day or it would be, it's Die Hard. You know, after Die Hard, it was Die Hard on a boat. Then it was Die Hard on a plane. My movie is Die Hard in the Mind. It takes place right now. Bruce Willis, as he is, a 55-year-old John McClane. We see him as we've never seen him before. He is on his way. We see him back in New York. He's on a subway. You know, if you can imagine the trailer, he's in a subway. There's a voiceover talking about all his past accomplishments from the previous movies. So we see clips of that.
Yeah.
Died hard.
Yes,
you know,
he has.
That kind of thing, yeah.
We think that he's going to some celebration where we're finally going to give John McClane what he's due. He's not. He's going to a shrink. John McClane is a broken man.
Are you telling me that this is Die Hard? He might have dementia?
That is. I'm gonna put that in my notes. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. That is great. Dementia.
Shorty Die Hard. Okay.
My explanation is nowhere near as
so
as clear
why
as yours.
Is he headed to a shrink?
Because
didn't mean to say headed.
Yeah, careful.
He suffers from post-traumatic stress adventures.
Dear God, I'm glad to hear it, because up until this point, I was wondering how he was living his life.
Yeah,
with all that.
Exactly.
All that going on.
All that going on.
And outside of himself.
The people no longer care about him, that nobody is interested in John McClane. He has lost kind of like that glory of being the hero. His family's gone. They've actually made the Die Hard movie, the last one that we saw in our real world. They made that movie like he's become a parody of himself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so now he's gone to going to a shrink to just kind of exercise his demons. His shrink is played by Christian Bale.
Oh.
Yes.
So first of all, I'm going to say, is Christian Bale his regular weight? Is he beefed up or skinny?
He is regular weight Christian Bale.
Okay, all right.
Okay.
He's still in shape. He's in good shape.
Sounds like a healthy man, you know? Somebody who's got their head on straight.
British accent, American accent?
American accent.
Okay.
American
that's a really good question. Because actually, I would say if he's going to sound like intelligent or educated, can we go British? You don't want that?
It's a little alienating
accent.
We can do more
than in New York.
We can do some test reel footage, you know? I can send
it to
you.
Let's just have him do it in both. Kind of like that Angelina Jolie movie where she had them, you know, shoot it in like Czechoslovakian or whatever that was.
Perfect.
You know what I'm talking about. Okay, great. So can I ask you the who is he going to be battling?
Well, this is where your brain is going to explode. The shrink's office where John McClane goes to see a shrink gets hijacked.
Oh, my God. What are the odds?
I didn't 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So the shrink gets kidnapped. When we don't see who takes the shrink, John McClane he steps to go to the bathroom. He has to go somewhere. And he realizes, because he's been in this situation before, uh-oh, here we go again. He's got to work his way down each of these floors to get...
What's on the other floors?
Well, there's bad guys there.
Yeah.
What will start to happen, I'm going to cut to the end here, because there is a big, the third act is a big kind of mind. This is where things start to open up. We realize that John McClane has been in a coma since the first Die Hard movie.
Oh, no.
Yes.
And an alien robot species uses him as a battery?
I'm going to put that next to the dementia
note. And he takes the red pill or the blue pill.
Yeah.
You know, and he gets thinner.
And he has a lot of tattoos that tell him what's going on with his life.
So each of the floors that John McClane visits is a representative of previous Die Hard movies.
Oh my God, wow. It is brilliant.
So when he gets to the first floor to fight the main villain of who it is, it's Christian Bale. Turns wow. out he kills Christian Bale, steps up to him, takes off the mask, takes off, like, goes to, like, touch his face, face disintegrates. It's Bruce Willis.
Oh my God.
Wow. And Bruce Willis is kind of used to this situation, too, because as we know from The Sixth Sense, he's not going to be that freaked out when he no. figures out that he's the dead guy. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, then it's...
He's going to be fine. He's going to know that it's okay.
Absolutely.
And he's not even going to worry about the United States of Terra.
The That's... John McClane is coming from inside the John McClane.
That's thank right.
You. And thank... See, you guys
I got
know.
It. I'm
you guys
it
know
up.
What's going on. So when wow. he finally realizes, oh, I'm my enemy... Then we enter the real world where we see McClane in a coma. All our past favorites are there. Bonnie Bedelia is there. His children are there around the bed. We got William Atherton to come back, the reporter. Just a very loving
Wait,
moment.
So question about this.
Yes.
Has he been in a coma like since the first Die Hard?
After the premiere of the first Die Hard movie.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. So then when he finally realizes, oh, I am the one, I am the villain, I am the one who has to break free of this, it's accepting he must, you know, motherfucker, yippee-ki-yay-yay. And then...
So does he kill himself? Or does he hug himself, absorb himself into his own body, and then with double Bruce power just wake up?
I didn't bring up this part of the storyline because it's not as I'm trying to sell you the movie here, and we cut to the real world every once in a while and see Bonnie Bedelia with the family, and then they at the same time that Bruce realizes like oh man I'm my enemy, they're realizing like we should let Bruce go, it's gonna be all right. So McClane is, you know, he's let go. They turn the machines
so
off.
It's a mortality story about how hard it is to die.
See? Now, come on now.
Yeah.
It writes itself is what I'm saying.
Well, I think it's the darkest thing I've heard in a really long time, which is exactly why I know Christopher Nolan will do it.
Thank you.
I personally couldn't be more excited about the film. Yeah.
Soundtrack by the RZA. By
I mean,
the way. Soundtrack
right.
by the RZA.
If I wasn't sold, I'm sold now. If the RZA's on board, so's the RZA.
Do you have any questions or anything, Rhea? Just yeah. any other, like, I want to make sure that we hammer everything out so we're not even dropping a dollar on something we don't believe in.
I mean, I know I gave you a tagline, but do you have your own tagline other than the Die Hard dementia?
My tagline was, the hardest death is the last.
Ooh. Oh, wow. What about is your own?
Ooh.
That might be kind of a,
sure.
you know, because that is also true.
That is
the
I've
been mourning myself since the day I was born. We will be back with an in-depth review of Hellboy after this, but in conclusion of this segment, Ricky, you have your film. Rhea, do you agree?
Absolutely.
Oh, that shit is good.
Just right in the basket there, everybody. Right in the basket.
Welcome back. I'm Cameron Esposito.
Ricky Carmona.
I'm Rhea Butcher.
And we are about to get to our review of our dick flick. Nope, that didn't sound right. We're going to review a dick flick? I really want that to stick. I know I keep saying that every episode.
No,
but
I really want...
So we're going to review a dick flick. And today we've chosen Hellboy, the original. I want to go through a couple things about the movie before we get to the actual review. Also, just so you know, listeners, spoilers ahead. We will be spoiling the shit out of this movie.
For fun. For fun.
So this movie is based on a series put out by Dark Horse Comics called Hellboy. It was written by Mike Mignola. And the books follow the story of a demon, Hellboy, who works for the U.S. government as a part of the Bureau of Paranormal Research and Defense. The film also features the BPRD and the agents therein, including Liz Sherman, who's pyrotechnic or some shit like that. What's that called? Pyrokinetic.
Pyrokinetic.
But oh, I wish she was just a pyrotechnic.
She kind of is a pyrotechnic.
Yeah, she is.
Baby, she's a firework.
Yeah, baby, she is a firework. Liz Sherman is in this movie. Abe Sapien is in this
yes.
movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Abe Sapien, an amphibious man. Of course, Liz Sherman is played by Selma Blair. Abe Sapien is played by the lovely Doug Jones, who we have an interview with in just a second. And in this particular movie, Hellboy and his buds are aiming to prevent the end of the world as orchestrated by, guess who? That old Russian scoundrel, Rasputin. That was a big reveal, I thought. I wasn't expecting it to be Rasputin. So Ron Perlman is Hellboy also, we should say that. He was also both the original writer of this comic book, Mike Mignola, and Guillermo del Toro, who ended up directing it. He was both of their first choice to play Hellboy. And, in my opinion, a perfect Hellboy.
Oh, yeah.
The studio that produced this, they actually were hoping that the part would go to Vin Diesel. Doesn't that make you sad? Like, yeah. I'm so glad that didn't happen.
That would have been ridiculous.
Can you imagine Vin Diesel in this?
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked.
This part and Ron Perlman were made for each other.
I know. You got to have, like, a muzzle on your face. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you have to have been in the Beauty and the Beast TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I also read this, that the same company that did the makeup on this had done some makeup on the Beauty and the Beast TV show that he was on, and they were looking for to, like, mold his face, and then they just went through their old back catalog.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, we already got it. So they just used that, which is amazing. So before we review Hellboy, I had Doug Jones in the studio earlier, and I did a brief interview with him. So we're going to hear that right now. After the Doug Jones interview, Ricky, Rhea, and I are going to give you our take on the film. But please enjoy my chat with Doug Jones. So I'm Cameron Esposito, and right here in the studio with me, Mr. Doug Jones. I cannot tell you how excited I am to talk to you, Doug. How are you doing tonight?
The pleasure is mine, and I'm doing great, and thank you for having me, Cameron.
You look very handsome, not as so. You're svelte. You're a svelte.
I'm
dude.
A skinny. I'm skinny.
But actually,
you're being very kind.
I was expecting skinnier, only because I know you do most of your work in prosthetics. So
right.
I'm just saying that you look great and like a normal human being. Even you know,
yeah,
so
that
don't
is the nicest
worry.
Thing anyone's ever
yeah.
said about me. Oh my gosh. Thank you so much,
Doug. I am actually a huge fan of your work.
Aww.
I don't know if you've ever had this experience where you. Look up an actor and then you just realize that you've been seeing him for years and you had no idea.
Yeah, I get this
I'm
all
sure
the
that
time.
Happens to you all
I
the
get
time.
It all the time, yeah.
Like, for instance, The Gentleman.
Yes, from Buffy.
From Buffy.
In the Hush episode,
the
yes.
The Hush episode, which also, as you can tell by my flannel shirt and this
you're
haircut,
a, you're a
giant lesbian, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a giant lesbian.
So of course, you love Buffy.
So I love Buffy. Also, specifically, I don't know if you know if you remember that, but that episode, Hush, is when Willow and Tara get together for the first time.
It was.
So
yes.
it was like a very important formative episode in my life.
Sure.
Also, you scared the shit out of me.
And you would have been a young puppy when that aired.
Yeah,
the
I was
first
in
time.
High school.
Yeah, that was like 1999. I think we filmed that.
I was in high school and I had. Recurring nightmares and slept with my line because you're very convincing.
No, you're very good. Thank you.
You're
well,
very...
So I did my job.
Yes, you
okay,
did.
Okay, good.
Okay, talk to me about where did you start as an actor?
Yeah, as an actor, I started, I moved out here to Los Angeles from Indiana. 1985, moved out here to seek my fame and fortune. But I started in TV commercials. That was kind of like, upon the advice of a seasoned actor, as an unknown face, you better have a better chance of getting started with commercials. And so I took a TV commercial workshop, and from that, my agent picked me up. The guy who taught the class was a well-respected TV commercial agent here in town. So that was a kind of after my second lesson, he handed me his card and said, give me a call.
Obviously, I know that this is your thing is your bod. Like, you're mm-hmm. amazing at using your body.
Yeah.
Did you have training in that?
Mime in college was probably a turning point for me where I realized that we do have dialogue that goes beyond verbal.
Yes.
And the entire body gets into the act when you're an actor. And it should. When you take on a character, you take him on from head to toe. So being a mime, that really woke that up in me. Like, I understand now, so much can be said with expression and gesture and posture and action. So so that translates very well on a tall, skinny guy.
Absolutely. Right. You have a book out that's...
I do. Mime Very Own Book.
How did you get that book happening? Was that something? Are you
That's
still
crazy.
Doing this?
No, I'm not. I
be a mom if you want to, but I just mean like, I hope they're paying you many millions of dollars to be like a very professional mime in the back of
right.
a Batman movie or something.
Exactly right. Yeah. I was in Batman Returns, by the way, as a clown. So I did wear white face.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I've already.
I was thin clown in that. Yeah. Right.
You can come to me for all the career advice for things you
that I've done.
Do,
okay.
I'm already on top of it.
Okay.
I get you. I'm reading you.
You so get me,
I'm reading
Cameron.
You.
You so get
yeah.
me, but I hadn't done mime in a long, long time, and it'd be a long time since I've done a bar mitzvah party. Yeah, I'll tell you.
I think one reason that I wanted to talk about your body and also the work that you do is because I'm really interested in practical effects, and I know that because you're using your body,
yes,
and you're also because you're a skinny fella, as we were talking about earlier, you do a lot of prosthetic work and you do a lot of like wearing a headpiece,
right?
Which must be very heavy. You must have do like a serious amount of neck workouts.
Well, everything that looks like it is, it is. It's hot. It's heavy. You know, those big costs. The farther you get from human, the more work you're doing physically.
So you met Guillermo del Toro. I was reading that he used to be special effects makeup.
Yeah. When
You met him on what movie?
Mimic. His first American studio film that he was directing was Mimic. That was 1997. I was called by, again, the creature effects makeup industry. That's where all of my referrals came from and have come from to this day, where, you know, they're having a production meeting, they see drawings or conceptual art for this creature they're going to build, and someone might say, that looks like a Doug Jones part, and so then that's where the referrals begin and the ball gets rolling.
And that actually makes sense to me, because a lot of the characters that you've played, I mean, they do look like you. As much as you're not necessarily recognizable outside of your Abe Sapien face.
But if it's long and lanky, it'll look like me.
But also, even, I mean, I guess there's a way you hold your neck, but also, like, I guess I would say in some of the facial, like the Silver Surfer looks like you a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, he has his moments.
You're all over the place.
That was the hottest I've ever been, by the way. I just want to say the Surfer, I had a great ass. I did.
Wait,
come on.
I read this because I've had
you read about my ass?
No, first of all, I read all about your ass. but wait, that's not computer generated.
No,
that's not a motion capture suit.
No.
I had assumed.
Right.
Because of the shiny effects.
Yeah.
But that's you wearing a suit.
Me wearing a suit with some computer enhancements over me later. But now, in the Silver Surfer movie, when I lost my power and got tarnished and was sort of weakened,
exactly the part you're talking
about.
It's all me. So that's what you look like.
Yeah, without the CG over it.
Yeah, and they're just adding like that liquid metal kind of T-1000.
That's right.
Effect.
Exactly.
Wow, that's amazing because, you do look good. How much of that is... How much of that is you?
Oh no!
No, it was. You got a real serious.
It was
six-pack.
A serious six-pack. Yeah, that was all. Rubber muscle suit with a shiny exterior. That was. I slipped into it every day. I had three people had to help me get it on because it was so tight. But it was. Yeah, it didn't wrinkle or anything. It was the most wonderful fit of anything. I wanted to keep it when I was done to wear it to the beach and stuff.
Sure,
you know what I mean.
To see what anybody says.
Because I was so hot. I was so hot.
Can you eat?
Yes.
On set in that
yes.
stuff?
Yes, you can. Well, if it's a character that's glued down to my own mouth and I'm talking dialogue, then yes, you can assume that food can go in if words can come out. But the time when I have trouble eating is when I'm wearing a mask that would be glued on that has prosthetics built out, like a snout or something.
Okay.
Tank Girl was a good example of that. I had to sip things through straws all day and save food for the end of the day.
Wow.
When I was on Tank Girl, because it was a kangaroo face I had that was built out. Then it was glued on to my. It was a part of a makeup instead of a mask.
How are they making sure you're okay?
People do. They watch.
I mean,
out
you're
for
just
me.
Fine. You're just like the toughest.
I know what I'm saying yes to when I say yes to a movie with lots of prosthetic makeups and things. So man, and that's why when I did Mimic with Guillermo del Toro, look at me bringing it full circle. I brought us back. I met him because of that referral that I got to do reshoots here in L.A. for Mimic. I'm meeting this director. My second day of work, he sat across the lunch table from me and said, "Tell me everything you've been in before." So I started talking about all my credits and all the makeup artists I'd worked with. He goes, "Oh, what's he like as a person? I love his work." Well, I listed off Stan Winston and Rick Baker and like Oscar-winning makeup artists, so we connected on the monster level sort of thing with that. And then he told me that he did a lot of prosthetic makeups that he created himself in Mexico, doing his own production company, his own short films as he directed and starred in and made creatures for a lot of TV commercials. And so a lot in Mexico, which is a market that I don't know. So I hadn't heard of him before.
Sure.
Right.
And I know that in the first film, you originally did the voice, and then that was...
Voiced over by David Hyde Pierce. A studio decision to market the film.
Yes.
Because he was a bigger name than I was at the time and blah, blah, blah. And but that David Hyde Pierce was so kind to hear my original performance in his earpiece when he was doing that looping job and step back from his microphone and said, "What am I doing here?" which was a very sweet thing to say. And that continued when the film wanted to do the marketing and use his name and use his image. He pulled out. He said he didn't put his, he asked for his name to be removed from the credits of the film. It's on IMDb, but it's not in the film itself.
Yes.
He asked for not to be bothered with the red carpet premiere or any interviews. And then when asked why, he said it's out of respect to Doug Jones. Actors don't do that. Yeah,
no,
that's amazing.
Good for him. No, I'm so glad to hear that story. That gives me so much.
Yeah, you know, he's a decent human being. And I've never met him in person. So when I do, he's going to get a kiss on the left cheek.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. And also, I also think that, I mean, Ron Perlman is perfect as his role. You're perfect as your role. It's really amazing to see two actors where neither of them.
Well, and you know what the funny part about that is that Ron Perlman and I are very much like our Hellboy characters in real life.
Sure.
And that's how we relate to each other on the same sort of level that Hellboy and Abe do.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, no, he's the gruff, cigar-smoking, cussing guy, and I'm more the genteel, and I'll pet the back of your head and make everything better. That's more me.
Yeah.
So we really do get along like big brother, little brother. You know, I just love that man to death.
Well, that's excellent to hear. And I also am interested in the fact that in that movie, you played multiple characters, because I know that you also played the Angel of Death, and you played
the Chamberlain,
which is like that squishy-faced character.
Yes.
That you should look up. You should look up a picture of this if you're listening right now. You should look up a picture of the Chamberlain.
Mm-hmm.
How is that playing multiple characters in the same film? I know, obviously, you've also done that in Pan's Labyrinth.
I did. And this is all Guillermo del Toro induced, by the way. Pan's Labyrinth was the first.
Hey, man, if you're the best dude for the job, just get you twice or three times, right?
That was his attitude. Bless his heart. I would never suggest, like, Guillermo, you know, I should really do every character in the movie.
I've heard that about you. I've heard you won't work with anyone but you. I've heard that. No. I'm assuming it's all a top-down decision from. Obviously, he loves working with you, and
I adore him too. He is my favorite director I've ever worked with, and every other director knows that. So no one tries to compete.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Sure.
We're all good. But in Pan's Labyrinth, doing both the Fawn character and the Pale Man character, I spoiled him on that. So when Hellboy 2 came around, he's like, I got three characters for you this time. Oh, really? So if we do another movie, is it four next time? We're just going to keep stepping it up. So when he told me about Hellboy 2, he said, yeah, there's one character that only you can play. I wrote it for you. That would be the Angel of Death. And the third one, he said, well, you know, I just didn't know who else I was going to get. So the Chamberlain was just because I was in Budapest at the wrong time.
Well, you do like a beautiful curtsy when you're getting up as the Angel of Death. So
I love the Angel of Death. It is such a gorgeous character and ambiguous in a way, too. It's like neither male nor female, really.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's also neither good nor bad all the way. It's like there's a nurturing side and a healing side to this character, but also imminent doom is coming from that same character. So
I love
those characters that are kind of gray. You don't know which way to go with them.
The final thing that I'll say, Doug, and thank you again so much for coming in.
You're such a guest to talk with.
It's just been a pleasure to talk to you. I know that there is a rumor going around that Hellboy 3 has not happened because nobody can afford it. So what kind of Kickstarter do we need to get going?
That would be quite a campaign. You have to raise $150 million.
That's fine.
Can we do this?
I think we can do that. I mean, $150 million. What if we say $160?
Well,
extra $10 million.
Sure.
You just spend that however you want.
Well, listen, for gifts and chocolate bars. Yeah, no, the Hellboy 3 is something that we've all wanted to have happen. In fact, Guillermo del Toro has a part 3 storyline in his head. He always has. And that's why Hellboy 2 had so many, you know, cliffhangers, like, well, what happens next? And the Angel of Death scene is one of them, where I'm spouting off what's to happen with Hellboy and what his ultimate goal, why he was created, and if he stays alive now, then he'll have to fulfill his destiny. So that should happen in Hellboy 3,
right?
Shouldn't it?
Yes.
But the problem is both Hellboy 1 and 2 made enough money to warrant a sequel, but not enough to demand a sequel, if that makes any sense. So that's why the first one was with Sony Pictures. The second one was with Universal Studios. So if there's a third one, I don't know who's going to do it or who's going to want to cough up the money, but we all do want to do it. I mean, that's Ron Perlman and I both talked about those are our favorite characters we've ever played.
Well, I also wanted to talk about what's going on for you right now. You're on Neighbors.
The Neighbors on ABC I am having so much fun on this show. I'm a recurring guest on six episodes in the entire season, and I my last sixth episode is airing by the time this podcast is out. It will all have been on the air. It's the musical episode. The musical episode. Now shut up, okay? Now if you're a Buffy fan, you know the Once More with Feeling episode.
Of course I do.
Right, of course you do. And that's one of the most popular ones.
So yes, it is.
We're
along
singing
with Hush.
Along with Hush. Thank you. We are singing and dancing in this Neighbors episode, and the musical is written by Alan Menken, who brought Disney back with the Little Mermaid and all that. Right. So. No, huge. So that's airing, of course, Wednesday, March 13th. But by the time you're hearing this show, you can go to Hulu and you can watch the entire season and you go find me in about six episodes.
And then write fantastic things on various
message
boards.
Yes, exactly.
Whatever message board you can find.
Exactly.
You're also on Falling Skies.
Another exciting project. Yes.
I haven't seen any of Falling Skies, which is, it should be right up my alley. I don't know why I haven't seen it.
It would be up your alley. It's a great show. It's on TNT and DreamWorks Television. So it's a Steven Spielberg executive produced project.
Yes.
Right. And starring Noah Wyle from ER. And so Noah Wyle, basic storyline is he's heading up the human resistance on Earth, fighting back against the aliens who have invaded and taken over Earth.
Oh, can I guess? Do you play?
Guess what? An alien!
Yeah, okay, nailed it! It was either that or you play Noah Wyle.
Right,
it
exactly.
It could have been either one.
In a prosthetic makeup that makes me look like Noah Wyle.
Exactly.
But it's, I joined the cast as a series regular for season 3, which starts in June of this coming summer, 2013.
Well, then I've got some time to catch up.
You have time to catch up on seasons 1 and 2. They're out there on the Netflix or the box DVD sets. But season 3 is going to be very exciting. So it's really just a wonderful show.
And the final thing that I want to talk about for you is that you also have John Dies at the End.
Yes.
Which is one of your most, is that your most recent film that you worked on?
That has come out,
That's
yes.
come out, yeah.
And John Dies at the End, directed and written by Don Coscarelli, who brought you the Phantasm movies and also The Beastmaster with Mark Singer in the 80s.
Yeah. Wow.
Right. And
okay, sure.
He also wrote and directed Bubba Hotep. So Don Coscarelli is like a cult favorite.
And I also saw the trailer for this, and it looks
bizarre, isn't
totally
it?
Crazy.
It's crazy. And it's hard to explain the storyline of this one, but there's two young lead actors that are our lead characters, and the two of them are using a street drug called soy sauce. The soy sauce makes you hallucinate, but it chooses who it will let see the real other dimension. So these two kids are the ones that have been chosen to save Earth because and the soy sauce kind of decided that for them. It's hard to explain. Really hard to explain this movie. I play Roger North in the story, and I come from the other dimension as a kind of a gatekeeper, and I'm the one who's been keeping an eye on Earth, and I visit the kids to tell them here's what you're supposed to do, here's where you're going, and here's how to get their responsibilities on you. So I come with information, but I also come with a lot of quirk and a lot of questions because I've been observing Earthlings, and I really want to know why they do what they do. So
You're wearing a suit in this role, right?
I'm wearing
regular outfit.
Weird clothes. I'm wearing a weird jacket with sparkly stripes in it and whatnot. But I look like a humanish. It's my own face.
I was gonna say, with
some dark circles under my eyes and some pale skin. But yeah, I look
like a man suit, like a human suit. Is what I meant. Like a three piece.
Yeah, exactly.
Not like a Silver Surfer.
No, I'm not wearing a monster suit in this one. I'm wearing a person suit. But I look like a sickly, weird, odd human, which I kind of am. In real life, you know, but thank you for being so kind.
No, you look great. And that's on April 2nd that comes out on DVD.
April 2nd, yeah.
And Blu-ray. I really hope all you guys listening check out as much of Doug's work as you can. Not only is he a joy to meet here in studio, he's amazing to watch work. One of the most impressive actors, I think, physically out there. Love your stuff. So
oh,
it was really great
to
meet you.
Thank you so much. You're
and
so kind.
I hope to see you again.
Well, I hope so. And if anyone's listening that's on Twitter, at Actor Doug Jones, find me.
Great. Sounds good.
I say stuff.
I'm sure they will. I'll find you on Twitter.
Okay.
See you there.
Okay. That's
right.
Love. Thanks.
So that man's adorable.
<It's> awesome.
Did you guys love meeting him as much as I
awesome.
Did?
Yeah,
I feel like my palms were sweating. I felt like Eminem right before I was about to give my performance where I put it all on the line.
That's right.
And he's beautiful. It's great to talk to. I can't wait to hear what you guys thought of this movie. We're going to start with you, Rhea. Rhea, what is your favorite part of this movie?
Okay, my favorite part of this movie. First of all, I am a sucker for Nazis as bad guys.
Huge. You ain't telling me.
Fan of Indiana Jones. If you put, unfortunately, if you put Nazis in anything, I will watch it. But So that Cronin, the bad guy?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that is my best part.
He's like a mechanical Nazi.
Yeah, he's a mechanical
Nazi. So
he's
a robot. He's basically a Nazi Terminator.
Yeah. Robotsy.
Yeah, he's a Robotsy. Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
I had to look up pictures of the actor in his monster makeup just so that I could sleep after seeing this movie because I thought that guy was so terrifying. So that's a great,
yeah,
choice on there.
I mean, look, you guys can't see it, but my face is frozen.
You look horrified right now just describing your favorite thing.
Remembering the best part of the movie.
These are a few of your favorite things. That is not, yeah, that is not in the initial song. I don't think that nobody ever made that face when they were talking about kittens and paper packages.
Oh, and masochistic surgical face removal or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Very intense.
Yeah, Ricky, that dude is awesome.
What's your favorite part of the movie?
I'm going to kind of ride the coattails of Rhea there. Clearly the bad guy is the best thing in the movie. And just to add on that, the makeup and Hellboy, everything about Hellboy, the creation itself, like visually what he looked like on screen, it's just like so great. I mean, it that character, that look just fits so well. Like every time he shows up, it just fits so well in the frame and the world, like the poses that Hellboy hits. Like Ron Perlman kills it in this movie. He's so great. There's a part where he's fighting in the subway and one of the creatures like punches him and he goes through the wall. And I don't read the comic book, but I just know like the pose that he's hitting when he's like sliding back. Like, I just know I've seen that image in the comic book before. Like, yeah, that's what you want that guy to do. He's always hitting some kind of, like, Hellboy does this. When he goes back, Hellboy goes, like, it's just, he just made these really great choices. And they look so great with, like, that shiny red makeup. And
you know what is very interesting to me as well? So we don't talk about what's our favorite and least favorite parts of these movies. But we all came in with the same one because my favorite as well is the character design on the three main characters. I suppose they're the main characters. Hellboy, Abe Sapien, and this robo-Nazi. All three of them. This was made in 2004, 9 years ago, and mostly with makeup and practical effects. There's some computer-generated stuff, and I mean, obviously, that 9-year gap, that's a big 9 years in terms of computer generated effects.
Sure.
But the makeup is so beautiful.
Yeah.
I know that Guillermo del Toro has a background in makeup artistry. I don't know if we got a chance to talk about that, but it's something that Doug and I talked about during the interview. And I mean, you can absolutely tell because he's shooting to optimize the look of all these actors, I felt like.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I agree
absolutely
with you, Ricky, that also he chose people that are just great with their bodies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, heavens, the three of them. I mean, don't get better physical acting than
right,
that.
Right, right. It's very, every time Robo-Nazi pulls out those swords, I mean, it's just, you just know, like, oh, man, something fun is about to happen right now.
Yeah,
whenever
absolutely
you see Abe Sapien in the water, it's just, it's great, you know?
And I want to move on to say what everybody's least favorite part is. Rhea, what is your least favorite part of this movie?
Okay, my least favorite part, and I don't know because I'm not, like, I'm familiar with the comics or anything, because this could be outside of, like, the movie's choices, although they did decide to put this in the movie. I was not a huge fan of, like, Liz being not in control of her power or, like, unwilling to be in.
Oh, that's a really, I don't know.
The point near the end of the movie when she needs to save Hellboy, like she can't just do it on her own. She has to ask the guy to hit her. And I just think it's an odd choice to like have a female supposed hero need to be hit to like save somebody and like use her powers.
That's a really interesting point, Rhea. I'm so glad that you brought that up. You know, but I will say that I guess the one thing that's a little bit of a consolation to me is that besides Hellboy, who seems to be vaguely perfect, the other, like Abe Sapien, I mean, there are people that actually do die in this movie that are good guys. And then Abe Sapien also is injured. Mm-hmm. And so he doesn't seem to be like all powerful either. I guess what I'm saying is at least it's not she's the only weak one.
Right.
But I agree with you.
Yeah, they are all flawed. It's just unfortunate that is what has to be her flaw, you know?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
She can't just do it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, maybe I just am so used to seeing Selma Blair be sulky.
Sure.
She just looked so right to me that I didn't even think of that. And I'm usually the first person to come up with the with why I'm sad a lady had to get hit in a movie or why I'm sad they weren't hitting ladies more, you know? But that's a really great point. Ricky, what was your least favorite part?
My least favorite part of this movie was the story. This is a movie to me that made me realize, like, hey, you know what? Sometimes I think I do need to see a straight-up origin story. Every time I was watching the movie, I just kept being like, is that somebody important I should know? It feels like the movie just jumps right in. You get a little bit of, you definitely get Hellboy's creation up top. And then it just kind of like jumps into, all right, now this is happening and here's what they have to do. And I just felt like this movie could have been the second movie in a trilogy that we didn't necessarily get. If a character showed up, do I need to know more about this person? Is this important? Am I not making a connection here?
It felt like there was a lot of meanwhile. You know, like,
sure.
Yeah.
Like, oh,
you know, I don't know how closely this felt. There is one particular branch or like set of Hellboy comics that this specific story is supposed to be from.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what they took out. I will say that I did think there was some problems with the branching. My least favorite part was actually the monster design on Samael.
Yep.
Which is, he's like the bad monster.
Yeah.
He's the hellhound. And here's what's crazy about this. The dude who plays Samael is Brian Steele, and he is a very accomplished prosthetics actor in his own right. He's like a monster actor. He was on the Harry and the Hendersons TV show. He played Harry on the Harry and the Hendersons TV show. He was also in Predators. He was the main predator in that Brody Predator Predator movie. He also in the Terminator Salvation. He was like the half human Terminator. I don't know. He's done all this stuff, and I felt like they basically put him in like a Power Rangers costume. Like the arms were baggy on his suit, like the jacket that Michael J. Fox wears in the future in Back to the Future.
Yeah,
like he had like these wacky flinging around arms when he fights Hellboy. He's basically just vaguely slapping him with like windmill arms.
Yeah.
I had a real
like
problem
around.
With. I'm also not super into Cthulhu imagery. Do you guys? I don't know if you think he's spooky at all, but I'm not. I don't give a shit about a squid face. Doesn't ever scare me. So that's a lot of the bad guys here have that like squiddy tentacle thing going on. It just kind of grossed me out. I couldn't eat after I saw this movie.
I thought they looked great in the clearly like computer generated images, because like it reminded me a lot of the fourth Aliens like underwater scenes.
Yeah,
those looked super rad when they were like swimming and stuff. But yeah, when they were fighting, for me, I also really hated the exterior spine because it was popping around like a pipe cleaner or something.
Yeah, there were a bunch of flaws in the execution of the bad guys, I think, in this movie. I think all of the good guys, so interesting. The bureau was so interesting. The relationships between all the good guys were so interesting. And then all of the bad guys were like useless and didn't make any sense, except for that Nazi. So if it had just been like that one robo-Nazi fighting our dudes, I would have been totally chill with
it. That's a solid movie right there.
But in conclusion, Rhea, how many Right Hands of Doom would you give on a scale of 1 to 5 Right Hands of Doom for Hellboy?
How many red painted hockey gloves?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I'll give it 2, honestly, because like just the movie was, it took me 5 days to finish this movie just because I was not into the plot. Characters, yes. Plot, no.
Yeah. Ricky, what do you have to say?
I'll give it 2.5 Right Hands of Doom.
Yeah. I'm right with you guys. I'm at a 2, maybe 2.5.
Yeah.
I mean, because the reason to see, it's one of those movies that I want people to see if you care about acting in a sci-fi movie. Like, if you're at all interested in, like, hey, what does it look like when people have tons of shit on their bodies and they totally make it look like a normal thing? There's no part of you that ever is like, hey, that's a guy in a suit. Like, there's no Chewbacca moments. It just looks great. And
yeah,
so you should
it really
see
does.
It for that reason. But if you're going to see it as a movie, you know, just maybe fast forward to the good parts and then watch something else after.
Watch Hellboy 2 after.
Actually, Hellboy 2 is a much better film.
Hellboy 2 is great.
Yeah. We'll be back with our final thoughts after this. I'm Cameron Esposito.
I'm Rhea Butcher.
I'm Ricky Carmona.
And we are wrapping up today's show. Thank you so much for listening in advance. But also, I want to leave you guys with a final thought from each of us about something that we're really into this week. So, Ricky, I'm going to start with you. What are you into this week?
I am really into music documentaries this week. I watched two solid ones that I would love to recommend to everybody out there. The first one is A Tribe Called Quest documentary, Beats, Rhymes, and Life. The Journeys of A Tribe Called Quest, directed by Michael Rappaport, your boy. The second one is LCD Sound System's Shut Up and Play the Hits. They're fantastic documentaries. They're about music. They're about relationships. Really great. Can't recommend them enough to everyone.
And Rhea, what do you want to leave everybody with?
I am going to recommend to watch a little skateboard video called Pretty Sweet, which is by the skateboard companies Chocolate and Girl Skateboards. I'm a skateboarder myself, so I've been getting back into it since moving to Los Angeles and just checking it out. It's super fun. It's a crazy video. They mess around with like special effects. They always have the best music in their videos. Definitely Mark Johnson's part. You'll understand when you see. So check it out.
Wow. It sounds like actually we're kind of on the same page this week. Ooh. Because, I mean, I understand those were divergent recommendations, but they shared a core sensibility, and mine does as well. I recently was revisiting, sometimes every 6 months or so, I like to listen to Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You, followed by Whitney Houston's Always I Will Always Love You, just to understand that the world is a diverse place with tons of mysteries.
Absolutely.
You know? And so I was queuing up Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You, and I found a video on YouTube that honestly, as a Parton fan, I couldn't believe I didn't know about. I didn't know that the song I Will Always Love You, she sings in Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. Now, the movie Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, she plays a madam that is dating a person who's running for the legislature. Okay. And that person is played by none other than Burt Reynolds.
Damn right
it is. I still was unprepared. Because when I say she sings I Will Always Love You, maybe there's a part of you that thinks that it comes in, sort of a background music while they're looking at each other. No. I'm talking about a scene that you can easily find for free on YouTube where Dolly Parton sings I Will Always Love You directly to Burt Reynolds' face.
And mustache.
And in the middle, they have like a conversation about whether or not they're going to stay together. And then she finishes the song.
After the conversation?
I just don't even know what to say about the fact that I didn't know about this, and I really think you need to cue it up right now. Dolly Parton, I Will Always Love You, Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. That is what I will leave you with. Next week, we are going to watch Brian De Palma's The Untouchables.
Yes.
Now, this is available on Netflix Watch Instant. And yes, it is a good movie. I've never seen it, but I know that it's I know that it is heralded. Here's the reason I want to see it, and you're going to hate the reason I want to see it, Ricky.
No.
I want to see it because David Mamet wrote the movie. And I just feel like now that I am familiar with his daughter, Zasha Mamet, from the television show Girls, I'm embarrassed that I'm not very familiar with the works of her father. Because in a perfect world, I would know more about David Mamet than I know about Zasha Mamet, but it's just not true. I don't. So out of my own shame, I am willing to expand my mind, and next week we'll be watching The Untouchables. So please watch along with us, and you can look for that review next week on the show. Until then, I am Cameron Esposito.
I'm Ricky Carmona.
And I'm Rhea Butcher.
And you have been listening to Wham Bam Pow. Remember, tough guys don't look back at explosions. Wham Bam Pow is recorded at Maximum Fun headquarters by Lindsay Pavlis. Thank you, Lindsay, and Maximum Fun, and Jesse Thorne, and thank you for listening.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.